Welcome. This is lecture six in our Introduction to Virtual Machines class. At this point, we're going to kind of switch gears. Prior to this, we've been doing multiple chapters per lecture. At this point, we kind of slow down and take one chapter at a time. Again, I said when I picked out this book, there's lots of different books on virtualization and virtualization platforms. And if I had picked one hypervisor that I wanted to focus on, say VMware or Hyper-V, I can find a really good book that goes very in-depth on any one of those subjects. The reason that I picked this book is because I want to take that sort of unique approach where I'm not talking about one particular hypervisor, but rather talking about multiple hypervisors. And again, I said this class we're going to really focus on the three different ones, VMware, Hyper-V, and at the end Zen. And again, this is to kind of give us that broad overview, and really to realize that even though we're talking about different hypervisors in different ways, they all kind of interact the same way, and they have the same features and offer abilities to other ones. And again, I'm having you write those papers, and those papers have you go deeper into depths on certain topics. And hopefully through those papers, you'll realize the differences between the different hypervisors, and within your business environments, be able to make the decision on which one is right for you. Again, there's no right answers to my papers. They're written in such a way that you can interpret them and respond to them in different ways. But really, when it comes down to it, when you're given a specific situation in a specific environment, usually there is a correct and right choice for hypervisor platforms. So again, with chapter 9, we're going to talk about managing storage. And again, I mentioned the book sometimes doesn't go as deep as I want to go. So this lecture tends to be one of the ones where I add a lot of information in. I've modified this PowerPoint presentation to include some more slides. I'll make sure that gets uploaded to CM Connect so that you can see that as well. And it's going to include more information, some of which is not in the book. So at the end of chapter 9, we're going to understand how they connect to storage resources, examine some configuration options, tuning practices for our virtual machines. So remember, we started out, we said virtual machines, all that they really are is a file somewhere stored on disk. So again, when we activate the machine, we bring it up into memory, and memory uses it, and we interact with it like it's a physical machine somewhere. But really, it's the host that provides the physical hardware. Now, when we start to expand our virtual hypervisor network, we're going to have multiple host operating systems that are going to provide service to our guests. And when we want to communicate between hosts, when we want to be able to have some redundancy and some fault tolerance, they're going to have shared storage to be able to move those guest operating systems back and forth. So at this point, whether you've used a type 1 hypervisor or a type 2 hypervisor, we've actually created virtual machines on disk. And again, disk storage comes in many different formats, so we need to talk about how it saves it to disk. So in terms of an enterprise level environment, we want to make sure that our data is protected on our disks. So we need to deal with something that's called a RAID. Well, what is RAID? RAID is a redundant array of independent disks. So basically, instead of just using a single hard drive, a single point of failure location for our virtual machines, we're going to have multiple drives that are going to be able to store our data. And by having multiple drives, we can increase our performance, we can increase our reliability, we can have larger sizes than are available with the limitations of the hardware out there. We also have some error correction to make sure that the data is written. Again, that's going to provide us some reliability and some performance. So again, at this point in our class, those of us in class have only written to a single disk. Those of us outside of class, I assume that you're only writing your virtual machines to a single disk, but maybe you have one of these other setups that we're going to talk about today. So again, RAID comes in different flavors. There's some commonly used ones, RAID 0, RAID 1, RAID 5, RAID 6, RAID 1 plus 0. Please don't call it RAID 10. It's not RAID 10. It's RAID 1 plus 0. And then there's some more RAID types out there that You can use that do provide other things, but because they're so rarely used, we're not really going to focus on them today. And really, when we talk about RAID, we talk about our concern of mean time between failures. That is, how long does it take for a disk to fail, and what can we do in that time to ensure that our data is reliable and that we can have access to our systems. So again, we'll talk about the different types of storage mediums. We'll talk about network attached storage and storage area networks and how that is affected by that mean time between failures. So again, I said the first RAID that we normally talk about is RAID 0. So RAID 0 actually splits data between two or more disks. RAID 0 has no fault tolerance, so it's actually striping across disks. First it writes to disk A1, then it writes to disk A2, then it writes to disk A3, then it writes to disk A4. In terms of reliability, if one of the two RAID 0 drives fails, you're going to lose all of your data. There's no backup of it. In terms of performance, RAID 0 gives you the best performance. Again, it's striping across multiple disks. It doesn't need to wait for one write to finish before it starts writing to the second disk. So when you're spinning disks or spinning there, it doesn't have to wait for that. When your SATA drives are writing to your SSD storage, it doesn't need to wait for that. And really, it's only used in NFS systems, gaming systems, to give that high level of performance. And if the data is lost, they don't really care about it. You don't want to use it as a backup solution. Again, it's not going to provide any reliability for your data. In terms of RAID 0, again, I said the minimum number of disks that you need are 2 because you're going to be writing across those disks. And effectively, what RAID 0 does is add those two disk sizes together. So if we have a 250 megabyte gigabyte disk and we have a 500 gigabyte disk, the total size in a RAID 0 configuration is 750 gigabytes. If we have a 1 terabyte drive and a 1 terabyte drive, we're going to get 2 terabytes out of our RAID 0 configuration. Next up is RAID 1. RAID 1 is data mirroring. So that's actually simultaneously writing the same data to two different disks. Again, the minimum number of disks that you need for a RAID 1 configuration is 2. You need exactly one copy of every disk that you have in a RAID 1 configuration. So if you want 2 disks, you need to have 4. If you want 3, you got to have 6. Again, it's going to be a factor of 2. And again, it's going to copy anything that it writes to one drive. In terms of performance, you're not going to get any performance gains with the write head because it has to write as fast as the slowest disk writes. It makes sure that it's mirroring all of the data that's copied between it. One thing that RAID 1 buys you is that if one of the two disks fails, all of your data is saved on the disk that's fine. So what you need to do at that point is replace the failed disk. When you turn it back on, it rebuilds the RAID array and everything will be hunky-dory. You shouldn't have any loss of data. In terms of size, again, if you have a 750 gigabyte disk and a 250 gigabyte disk, in a RAID 1 configuration, you're limited to the smallest disk size. So the maximum RAID array size you could have with a 250 gigabyte disk and a 750 gigabyte disk is 250 gigs. Again, it has to mirror the drive exactly. So you can't have a larger size on one and a smaller size on the other. If you have 2 1-terabyte drives, again, you can get 1 terabyte of storage because it's going to mirror that data across the two of them there. The next step up is a RAID 5. Again, that's a better combination of the two different RAID styles that we've talked about. So it's going to do some striping and it's also going to do some mirroring. The minimum number of disks required for a RAID 5 is 3 because it's going to do the mirroring and it's also going to do striping. So it will stripe across 2 disks and then it will mirror that disk to another one. Again, it's what's called distributed parity, so it's going to save a parity bit on the third disk, so it knows when the data isn't reliable. Again, if one of the 3 disks fails, you just have to replace it. Again, in the configuration where you have some odd drive sizes, it's going to be a combination of the 2 smallest drives for the total number of size, or if you have 3 1-terabyte drives, you're going to get 2 terabytes of storage out of a RAID 5 configuration. RAID 6 is what's called a hot spare. Again, This is more common now with a virtual environment and SAN storage because it has less mean time between failures as a RAID 5, but it has a longer write time. So it's a little bit slower than a RAID 5 configuration, but it's a lot more reliable. And it guarantees data because it's using a double parity bit. Again, it's not true mirroring of that the disk drives. It's creating a parity bit to save that information, but it's going to give you more reliability. Lastly, I want to talk about is RAID 1 plus 0. Again, not RAID 10, it's RAID 1 plus 0 because you have a RAID 1 configuration and a RAID 0 configuration. So your RAID 1 configuration, again, is mirroring all the drives. Your RAID 0 configuration, again, is striping across the drives. So the minimum number of drives that you can have in a RAID 1 plus 0 configuration is 4 because it's going to mirror the two drives and then it's going to stripe across them. So this is going to give you your best performance and it's also going to give you good error handling. But again, requires much more disk space than a RAID 6 or a RAID 5 configuration. So depending on how much money you want to throw into it and how much disk space you want, you're going to choose the RAID size that's correct for you. Again, these RAID slides weren't in your book. Here's the site that I cited for those sources. You can check that out for yourself if you'd like. There's some more information there on different RAID setups. So again, I said in terms of RAID, RAID's just totally dealing with disks. So again, when we talk about disks, we can talk about local storage in our local host. So that's actually having the physical hard drive in the host that's hosting our virtual hypervisor. But we want to move away from that. We want to have multiple host operating systems be able to have virtual machines stored on them. And we want our virtual machine to be able to interact with any of the hosts in our data center. Microsoft's implementation of this is called clustering. VMware's implementation of it is actually groups or clusters or hosts. And again, they all support it. They all support moving hosts from one to another most of the time live without ever turning it off because it's not really moving the virtual machine. It's not really moving the files. It's actually just moving the pointers or the memory of the active system in the virtual environment from one host to another. So it's very small, it's very fast, very efficient when you're using the correct backend storage. So again, in terms of backend storage, there's two real main choices that people use, either a SAN or a NAS. So NAS is what's called network attached storage. You're actually sharing the storage over the network file system. It's very easy to manage, very easy to set up. They make devices that specifically have an Ethernet connection that you just plug and play into your network, and you can write data to all of the devices on your network. The issue with network-attached storage is that it's shared with your network. So any traffic that's going out over the network, any traffic that's going out into the internet is going to interact with writing to your file system. So in a virtual environment, that network-attached storage can actually be bogged down by internet traffic. And that's not generally a good thing. The next iteration up from that is the storage area network. The storage area network actually has a dedicated connection for the storage area network. So you install what's called a host bus adapter, or HBA, into your hosts that are only going to talk to the storage medium. And you actually have access to the raw storage. It's very fast, it's very efficient. You pay a lot of money actually to have software installed on your storage area network. So the storage area network actually has an operating system that deals with writing to and from the RAID arrays in a way that's much more efficient than the network attached storage. Again, you pay for that. So the storage area networks, again, the cheapest one that I've seen is something in the $15,000 range, where the network-attached storage, you can get sub $100 for that. And again, you're going to pay for the speed and the reliability. When setting up your storage area network, you also have multiple choices. You can use what's called fiber channel, or you can set it up using something that's called iSCSI, which allows you to have an Ethernet connection to your SAN. Again, it's not the same Ethernet connection that you're using to actually access your network, It's a dedicated connection to your storage area network. The reason for this is that people love to use Ethernet. They understand how Ethernet frames work and Ethernet switches work. Fiber channel has been around longer than Ethernet in terms of the storage area network. So there's this big battle going between the fiber channel connections and the iSCSI or fiber channel over Ethernet connections. And I have provided some links here to some YouTube videos. If you have an interest in watching this, you can see how the debate goes on, and they provide some good information on which one's better. Again, each has their own benefits, each has their own drawbacks. So I encourage you to kind of look at that and see what the experts say on that. So one thing also that I wanted to talk about was the different types of disks. So of course, most of you know that solid state drives tend to be the fastest disks now. So there's no moving parts in them. Their read-write access to them is very fast. The problem with SSD drives is that their mean time before failure is very high. So your SSD disk is going to die much faster than your spinning disks. Spinning disks also come in many different varieties, each providing different performance characteristics. So that the ones that we use for our home computers usually are configured as SATA. Prior to SATA, there was IDE. So again, the pin interface. IDE drives a lot slower than SATA drives. SATA drives nowadays usually come up to 7,200 RPM. Again, that's the rotations per minute, how many times the spinning disk can spin in that. There's also serial attached storage or SAS drives. Those are the enterprise level disks that normally go into a SAN connection. Those disks tend to be in the 10,000 to 15,000 RPM speed. So again, you're going to get double the performance of an enterprise level disk in a storage area network than you would on a regular SATA disk for your home computer. Also, in terms of speed, is reliability. Again, enterprise level disks last a lot longer than regular disks do. And that's because enterprise level disks in a SAN environment are being read and written from all the time. Your home computer does some reads and writes, but most of the time doesn't do anything near what a storage area network does. Later on, we'll talk about data tiering and host storage and how that information is passed back and forth and why that matters as well. So again, connecting disks to your virtual environment is very important. That's where we're actually going to store the guest operating systems and how the guest operating systems are going to be accessed in our virtual environment. Again, there's best practices in a physical environment that are going to apply to our virtual environment as well. We talked a little bit about thin provisioning and thick provisioning before. Again, thin provisioning, not really writing the total disk space that it's using to the physical disks. So we say 80 gigabytes, but it's only going to take up what it actually takes up on disk versus the thick provisioning, where if we say 80 gigabytes, it reserves that 80 gigabytes on the physical disk. You can do thin and thick provisioning also on your storage area network. I recommend that you only do it in one place. So if you're going to thin provision your SAN, I recommend that you thick provision your disks in your virtual environment. If you thin provision in both places, there's no real way to know how much storage space is allocated across your network. Somebody goes hog wild on one of your virtual machines and starts downloading a bunch of things, you can run out of storage area network space real quick. So just be careful of that. Again, the environment that you work in, the SANs that you have access to, they'll provide you the best practices and recommendations on how you set that up. From my experience, again, you thick provision your SAN, you thin provision your virtual environment, and everybody stays happy. But really, we need to worry about how fast we can write to the disks. So the storage input and output is going to dictate how fast our virtual machines work and how well they work in our virtual environment. Again, in a network attached storage environment, we're relying on our Ethernet card, our network interface card, to communicate out to our storage area network. The network interface card is going to be busy talking with our internet traffic, with our file server traffic. So we want to make sure that we're alleviating that by using a storage area network and having dedicated host bus adapters to be able to talk to our SAN, whether they're using Fibre Channel or iSCSI to do it. Different storage mediums use different things. So again, this model that we're looking at here is VMware. Again, VMware is a monolithic hypervisor, so all of the drivers are installed within the hypervisor. Talking out to the storage area network is done by the hypervisor. The hypervisor has control over the HBAs, and all the communication is done through the hypervisor. Again, Xen and Microsoft, a little bit different. Those are the microkernelized hypervisors. The storage adapters can actually be installed and set up directly in the guest operating systems, and the guest operating systems can have direct access to the storage area network. In theory, this should be a lot faster through Microsoft and through Xen to be able to write files out to storage. But again, because the storage area network adapters, the host bus adapters are very busy, and there's bottlenecks on writing out those HBAs, there really isn't a performance gain by having them written to directly by the guest operating systems. The little bit of overhead that talking to the hypervisor does through VMware doesn't really make a difference in terms of performance. Will that change over time? Perhaps. One thing that VMware has done to kind of overcome that limitation is created what's called a virtual storage area network, or vSAN. So with Hyper-V's vSAN, the vSAN software has direct control over the physical disks in your SAN array. So instead of the hypervisor having to talk to the SAN operating system there to pass the data to the physical disks, now the virtual center can write to the physical disks in storage. Does this provide a performance gain? I'm not convinced. And the reason that I say that is that VMware is very good with virtual machines, but storage area networks, the vendor who provides the storage area network has spent a lot of time optimizing their software to work with their hardware. For VMware to come along and say that they can write out to the physical hardware of the vendor faster than the vendor's software can, I don't necessarily buy into that yet. Time will tell. Again, it's a very new sort of idea and premise that VMware has taken on here to write out to the physical disks directly. And the performance gains will have to be seen over time if it truly makes a difference or not. Another way that we can create data space and save data space in our storage area network, in our network attached storage, is through something called data deduplication. So I've mentioned this term before. Data deduplication is just keeping one copy of the data in memory. So we can do this on multiple different levels. We can do this at the byte level. It doesn't make sense for the bit level because bit, again, is only going to store ones or zeros. And really, we want it to be sequences of ones and zeros. So it makes more sense at the byte level. Above the byte level, we have the block level. Block level, again, chunks of bytes stored together, so we can deduplicate at the block level. We can also deduplicate at the file level. So again, if I save a copy of my resume and I save a copy of my resume in 10 different places, the storage area network can be smart enough to know that I have 10 copies of the same thing and actually only keep one copy. If I go in and edit one of my copies in one of my locations, then it's only keeping two copies. Worst case scenario, I go in and all 10 copies are different. It's going to keep 10 separate copies. Again, the 10 separate copies are what we'd expect in a flat environment without data deduplication. Data deduplication is going to save as much space as it can. And deduplication works well. It can save up to 30 to 90% of the storage space. Deduplication, again, built into your SAN. It's also built into Windows. Windows Server 2012 R2 supports data deduplication, so it knows that the files it's stored on and only keeps one copy of those. And again, if you think about your virtual environment, if you're running 80 Windows Server 2012 copies, it only needs to save one copy of each of those files on those systems in order to be unique. Most of the Windows files aren't going to change in the back end and how they work. They're going to stay the same. And when they do change, we just need to keep track of those changes rather than all the independent codes. That's why we have that such a differential 30 to 90%. Again, it depends on the environment, depends on what you're doing, depends on whether you're doing all the server upgrades at the same time or you're keeping different versions of software running at the same time. So again, we talked a little bit about thin provisioning before. Again, when we thin provision, we're not allocating the total space to the physical device at the time of implementation. We're only saving little bits of space, the size that we're actually writing to. So when we thin provision a disk, we can say that we're thin provisioning 150 gigabytes. We only write to 50 gigabytes. We thin provision 50 gigabytes. We only write to 30 gigabytes. We thick provision 30 gigabytes. And that actually reserves the 30 gigabytes. So on a 150 gigabyte disk, we've saved 110 of space where we've allocated 230 gigs. So again, we've allocated more space that's on than what is physically on the physical disk, but that's okay because we're not using it at present. Again, that's gonna work similar to our memory overcommitment or our CPU overcommitment, where as long as there's not a conflict, we're doing okay. In terms of storage input and output, again, we said this is a huge issue with how our VM's performance is going to act. So we can actually input quality of service or QoS policies to allow certain VMs to have precedence over other VMs. So again, I may have something like a storage drop where I can save all my files, share all my files across the network, and then I may have a domain controller. If I have a domain controller that's giving out DHCP, DNS information and providing services to the network, I may want that to have a higher throughput than my file server. I don't care if somebody can't access their resume, but I do care if a computer can't get on the network because it's not being allocated an IP address. So that quality of service guarantees throughput to critical business applications. And again, we'll talk more about how those resources are divvied up in some later chapters, but just be aware that this exists and we can control it. Another thing that I mentioned before is tiered storage. So again, when we buy a SAN environment, we do have the option of buying all the same types of disks. So I could have a SAN that is comprised totally of SSDs. I could have a SAN environment that's composed entirely of SAS disks, or I could have a SAN environment that's composed entirely of SATA disks. But typically what I'm going to do is I'm going to have front-loaded solid-state drives. Again, the solid-state drives, those are the fastest drives. They're not going to be have spinning parts, so they're the quickest. But they also have the highest mean time to failure, so I want to make sure that my data is not all on my SAN. It also happens that SSD drives are very expensive. So I don't want to, you know, have 10 SSD drives. I want to have 5 SSD drives, 5 SATA drives, and 5 SAS drives so that I have a variety of cost and storage options. So in terms of storage tiering, again, at the top of my SAN, I'm going to have my SSD drives. So again, that will be my smallest partition size. But I want to put my business critical applications in that pool. So I can have my business critical applications on those SSD drives and running thoroughly. Then I can have my next tier down as my SAS disks. Again, SAS disks are going to be faster than my SATA disks, but my SAS disks are also going to cost more than my SATA disks. So I'm going to have a limited number of SAS disks as well. But again, I'm going to have more SAS disks than SSD disks because they're cheaper than SSD. So I'll have my second tier applications in that. Then again, I have my backup storage, you know, things that I don't really care about until I do care about them when my system fails. I want those still to be on disks and those still to be saved. So I'm going to have those on my SATA disks at the bottom of my tier. Again, I'm going to have more SATA disks than SASC disks and more SATA disks than SSD disks. And those are going to provide the greatest amount of storage, but it's going to be the slowest speed to access. Now, again, I said that the difference really between a network attached storage and a storage area network is the operating system that the storage area network runs. Well, most SAN vendors provide automatic storage tiering capabilities. That is, if you go out and you buy a NetApp or you go out and you buy an EMC SAN, they'll actually do this tiered storage for you automatically. So when they see that your SAN's files are being accessed all the time in a certain place, they'll move them up into faster storage so that they can be accessed faster. So again, if I go in and I'm accessing one of my servers daily, and it sees that my server is being accessed daily and another service isn't being accessed, it's going to move that priority down and move my service up into that faster storage. It usually does that on a 24-hour basis, so at night it will do that storage move for you. Again, we'll talk about vMotion, which is VMware's motion between hosts. They also have storage vMotion, which allows you to move between the tiered storage if you want to control it. Again, some systems administrators don't appreciate software moving things for them. They'd rather know where it exists in the disks array, and you can actually have direct control over it. Again, I'm in the approach that I've paid a lot of money to have my storage area network. If I'm going to pay that much money, I'm going to let the storage area network do its thing and work in a way that provides its best performance. But again, there's caveats to that too. If I'm rolling out a new business system, nobody's accessed my new business system, but I know that they're going to in the near future, I'm going to want that on my higher disk storage than something in my low pool, even though it hasn't been accessed yet. So again, we talked a lot about disks. Again, we talked about RAID arrays. Those RAID arrays are very important to setting up disks. Whether or not we do a NAS implementation or a SAN implementation, we have to worry about the RAID arrays. Even if we're not using attached storage, if we're using storage that's directly in our host, we have to consider our RAID options and what is best for our performance and the reliability of our data. And again, being able to have our virtual machines connected to multiple guests, our multiple host operating systems are going to allow us to move our guests from host to host. Again, we talked about RAM and how RAM is that commodity that's most in contention, and we need to have the ability to free up some RAM. And one way that we can do that is actually migrating our guest operating systems from host to host, and shared storage actually makes that fast and easy. Again, there's best practices that we want to follow. Again, we don't want everything RAID 0. RAID 0 is going to be our best performance, but the reliability of our data goes way down. Again, if one of those two disks fails, then we've lost everything. And that's a lot worse than just losing a single disk. Because for every RAID 0, we're going to lose anything that's in that RAID 0. So again, there's that conflict between speed and storage performance. What do we want? What do we need? And again, it's going to depend entirely on our setup, depend entirely on our environment. And I'll leave that to you. Thank you.